Frank Hannigan is being introduced at the moment by Aidan Enright. Over to Aidan.
He's actually not going to talk about that tonight. What he is going to talk about is the fact that next year, Frank is publishing a book with a buddy of ours by the name of Ron Imick. And the book is called Being Asymmetric. I don't know if we're going to call it asymmetric. And tonight, Frank is going to give us a sneak preview of some of the exciting content. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Frank Hannigan.
Okay, I'm going to try and get as much into 15 minutes as I can. So, start off, what I'm interested in is making better companies that create more value. And I keep going back to these quotes. Top one is very tight. Bottom one is a little bit more ordinary language. What the bottom one does, it describes two kinds of people. The first kind of people who pick the best available choice, I like to call managers or optimizers. And the second group, the creative, the entrepreneurs, I like to call entrepreneurs. And when I think about the last 15 years, I've worked almost exclusively with startups. And my understanding was that startups are run by entrepreneurs. And when startups become grown-up companies, they're handed over to managers. And that's the way of the world. And as I start looking at bigger companies, grown-up companies, I'm beginning to doubt that works. So, what I definitely know from working in big companies and small companies is that optimization is a critical role in all organizations, whatever their size and maturity. But the one thing it's not is a leadership role. When it becomes a leadership role, it creates baroque failures, like Lehman Brothers, like the Irish Catholic Church in the 21st century, like Anglo-Irish Bank. And what those companies have in common is that they view themselves as imperial, as conquering armies who can dominate. They can dominate their staff, their supply chain, and their customers. They can demand things like super profits. They have, almost to a man, a sense of entitlement that disconnects them from society as a whole. And most damning, they have a sense of ground to defend. And that sense prevents them from being agile. I'm going to just look at two. The first one, you may not recognize, is the Ottoman Empire. Amazing success story. These boys went from Mecca to the gates of Vienna. They conquered a whole quarter of Europe. And yet, from the 16th century, they never moved on. And they didn't move on for a number of reasons, but I think I can pick a few out very quickly. They're very conservative. They don't change. There was no research and development program in the empire. Every year was the same. How much money can we get from the peasants? How efficiently can we get it from peasant to sultan with all the guys hanging off in the supply chain of rape and pillage? And that was it. And that feudal approach lasted from the 1300s all the way through to 1912. The other thing they didn't do was they didn't look at the outside world for hints, for clues as to how they should change. So if you look at the 19th century, it's bookmarks. At the start, you have the French Revolution. And three peasant revolutions take off immediately afterwards. The peasants were revolting in Poland, they were revolting in Serbia, and they were revolting in Ireland. And only one of those peasant revolutions succeeded, and that was in Serbia. I won't go into the details there. All of these geopolitical changes, all of the things in their environment that might define a winning strategy for the Ottoman Empire were ignored. It was conservative, change was not supported. And what happened within the empire was the great and the good, really special people who should have imagined this change, learned that they'd be better off keeping their mouth shut and optimizing for themselves. They used the system, they could see it was going down, but they made as much money from it as they possibly could for their families. And that eroded the empire even further. And by 1912, it was gone forever. A slightly smaller empire was Anglo-Irish Bank. This great Irish patriot, Sean Fitzpatrick. And it amazed me. At the time, it amazed me that so many brilliant people would work for him. So many smart journalists couldn't see through Anglo-Irish Bank. And I met one of his superstar guys for lunch. And I said very simply, in a bank with a single product, property finance, how can that possibly work into the future? And he took out of his pocket his bonus for the year. And he said, that's the future. Everything else, I don't care about. So very much like the smart guys in the Ottoman Empire, he'd moved on. He didn't believe in Anglo-Irish Bank. So even with really, really bright people, without a sense of purpose, you can't create value. And that company went down. I can tell you a bit more about it later. This is a real patriot. This is Tom Barry. And Tom Barry was prepared to give up everything, to give up his life for what he believed in. And that's the kind of person I want my kids to see as a hero. He was lucky enough not to lose his life. He lived long enough to write Guerrilla Days in Ireland, a book that's been read by pretty much every nationalist leader across the world since then. Ho Chi Minh's strategy came from that book. Che Guevara talked about it being a cornerstone of the strategy of the South American nationalist struggles. A friend of mine was a journalist, and he went for dinner in Colombia with the head of counterinsurgency in the CIA, and he was shocked to see this book on the guy's bookshelves. They said, oh my God, why? And he goes, I need to understand how these people think. They think like this guy. And what he did was he created an idea about war that was completely new. He talked about asymmetric war. And being asymmetric was understanding fully that your environment is completely dynamic and you have no control over it. It's about it being part of a guerrilla movement, not a conquering army. Nothing to defend because your position is always under attack and can never be fully protected. What you need to focus on is one corner, which is creating value. That's more important than the rank, the riches, the size of your house. All of those things are transient. What matters for you in your life, what matters for your business is that you create value that matters. I create this. This matters. People understand that. And once you've actually got to that point of definition, you need to change everything again because you need to work constantly to evolve if you're to remain relevant. And that means management by bumping into things. It's been described as my management style. I'm quite proud of it. And it is literally looking for the new thing all the time. Because the thing you're doing now may be relevant 3 years' time, it may not. But some of your time must be spent imagining the future, imagining what you do next. Again, if the only thing you remember about this presentation is this slide, I'll be really cool with that. Because it's not about the money, it's about creating value. A great life for me is about organizing people and resources to create value. It's about finding people who get you, who understand your products, and finding an efficient way to reach them, getting them to pay for what you've created, and allowing you to capture some of that value to reinvest. And once you've done that, constantly evolve, constantly move to this kind of optimization, the optimization that is creating the most value that you and your team can possibly create. So that's really the most important slide. What I want to do now is just talk about two things. I want to take one industry I know a bit about, newspapers. And I think you'll see in the slide, it's a bit like the Ottoman Empire. These boys have a way of doing things. It was set round about Gutenberg, and it's evolved very little since then. They talk about immutable franchises, about holding land. Cork is a franchise that the Examiner and the Echo have. Even Hurl is a franchise called Dublin. Great. I don't understand that because for the last 15 years I've worked outside of media and I know, as you've seen earlier, none of these things can be held. Every time they face real change, they deal with the change like the first guy, the leader, who's a manager. They look at the available opportunities. They're selling less newspapers. Let's put the price up. We're getting less advertising. Let's cut costs. The internet is now able to give us real-time news. Okay, let's focus on comment. All really cool strategies, optimization strategies. They're not working. And yet, if I was to look at newspapers, I would say they have immense skills, immense power. They're trusted, which is worth a tremendous amount of money in business. Anybody who's run a startup will know that's what they want to achieve. They have a platform to capture and process news and content. They've got a sales platform to sell many things to business, and they have a distribution platform through shops to sell many things to customers. So these are really powerful things. If they were a startup, they would be constantly checking out hypotheses, checking out if things worked, being prepared to fail 100 times to find the one thing that defined the newspaper success over the next 100 years, or the 10 things. I've picked out 3 things worth checking out. A friend of mine gets the New York Times online. He said, I couldn't live without it. I asked him how much he spent on it. He said, oh, I got the 10 news stories for free, and then I stopped for the week. Would you pay 79 cents for all the newspapers, all the stories, all the content? Oh, yeah. Why hasn't somebody asked him? I went back in history and wondered, how did radio stay relevant when TV emerged in the 50s? And what I found was radio became portable. In the old days, the 1950s, at the start of the 50s, people sat around the radio station listening to radio stories. Almost an identical thing to newspaper, to TV. It could never survive. But by becoming portable, being in the car, being at your picnic, suddenly they were able to find a white space. They created value and were able to survive long into successive TV. I also think that Irish newspapers have got themselves into a spiral of despair, and they've forgotten what anybody in business, especially in technology, does, which is hustle. There's a guy who hustles as hard as I do. Where's the money at? What will people pay? If you got trust, a platform to sell, a distribution platform to customers. I look at Highland Radio. They have a tiny little franchise in Donegal, poor people, very few of them. They have a bus that goes every couple of days to Dublin, and it's packed every day. They use their trust and their ability to sell to customers to fill a bus. Well done, that's brilliant. They make themselves relevant and they've moved on. So there are 3 things to test out. And I think the key thing about newspapers is that they need to read Alvin Toffler. He said a long time ago that the 21st century would have illiterates, and being illiterate was the inability to learn, unlearn, and relearn. And I think if I was to focus on one thing about being asymmetric, it's about changing our citizen. And our citizen for the future, if we want to be asymmetric, needs to be a problem solver. Knowledge learner, not necessary. Interesting, valuable in its own right, but the actual, most of the optimization stuff, the knowledge learning, is at this stage low value. The high value jobs will be people who can actually problem solve, from surgeons through to consultants who are able to see value in supply chain or whatever. I think the value system here is all wrong, and I think it needs to change. I'm overstating that, but I think we need to understand as a country, change is good, change is fascinating. It's risk, but it's also opportunity. We also need to bring to our kids a belief that I am good. The individual is an important part of society. Being a superstar, having loads of things, that doesn't make you good. What you have starting off with is good. It's about value creation, not materialism. It's giving the kids the tools to see themselves, what they have to offer, and giving them the horizons to imagine how they can apply those skills in the world. It's not a phase we will grow out of either. Education is forever. I think I'm going to start another process myself now, because I believe when you stop learning, you start dying. And if we're going to have an education system that cuts out at 23, we're going to destroy a huge amount of value by not allowing people to access all the information available. I am a hurling trainer, which is gas, being a Dubliner in Cork. The guy, Frank Flannery, who manages the Cork minor team, spoke to us recently, and he said, your job is not to make the best hurler. Your job is to make sure that next January, a year from now, every single one of those kids turns up again for training. And every one of those kids, from best to worst, is better than they were a year ago. And I love that attitude. It's about making education a doorway for the future, not a barrier to entry that some can access. So that's it. Townes Van Zandt is one of my favorite singers. I love this line. I think it's all about the journey. I think the way your journey starts and continues has to be about thinking about your strategy, not simply waking up and doing stuff. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Frank. Who would like to ask Frank the first question?
Thanks very much.
We've got a mini-focus final.
Three games away. I think the next game is against Saris, so it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. We'll
see. Have you pitched those ideas to the newspaper industry?
I have had many lunches, and the biggest problem with the newspaper industry is the fear of failure is immense. So the individual manager is really good, and I have huge time for them. But they know if they tried to pitch some of those ideas to the board, they'd be on hide with nothing. It's a bit like the Ottoman Empire. You know, really what they want to hear at the board level is how much money can this save? They're not open yet to ideas that allow them to survive by growth. And you know, not too long ago, the Echo was selling 29,000 copies. It sold 17,000 over the last 6 months. That's disaster. So I think all bets should be off in the industry. And I certainly have a couple of CEOs I talked to, and my advice to them is, you know, I think there are people here who work in technology. The idea of saying, take a risk, be prepared to fail, that's what we do every day. But for them, it's just such a horrendous cultural change. And it was the same for the Ottoman Empire. Anybody in the Anglo-Irish Bank who said, should we be betting everything on property finance? They had their head chopped off, or they were fired. So, and any journalist who questioned Johnny Fitz didn't get any more interviews. So you need to be very brave to lead change in these conservative societies and conservative businesses.
Go ahead. Would you think that all large organizations, so multinationals as an example, are in this kind of state of decline because they're refusing to innovate, I guess,